Let's say hello to, and then we'll have a longer conversation with Joel Ostro, who is a professor of comparative and international politics at Benedictine University. Hey, Professor Joel, welcome back. How are you today?
John, thanks for having me on.
What's the most important thing that's happened in the last 72 hours in Ukraine?
Oof. You know, a lot, and it's kind of strange. A lot of really important stuff is happening as attention predictably starts to seem to wane. You know, the Germany, most significant, I think, is that Germany has dropped its resistance to an energy embargo and seemingly dropping also its protests about how long it would take them to shift. Already have cut from about 40% dependence to, I think it's 13%, I read.
Yeah.
They have reserves to get them through until winter and are probably going to be able to offset. So, there's a couple of states in the European Union that are more resistant, and we'll see how that happens, how that goes. But that'll be a huge blow for the Russian economy and is extremely significant. And to me, it's significant because by removing that, it then becomes easier to transition to some of the other measures, not just sanctioning the ultra rich, but actually starting to seize assets. You see movement both in the U.S. and in Europe towards that, seizing those assets and then directing the proceeds to supporting the effort in Ukraine. So those things together are enormous.
Yeah, I noticed that not only did Germany pledge to stop buying oil from Russia, but Poland and Bulgaria are not getting it anymore because they refuse to pay in rubles. So Russia's cut them off. So if country by country we reach a choke point, I'm not sure what that does other than make life more difficult for Russians and their empire less profitable. It's more difficult to finance a war, say. But Adam Kinzinger, the Illinois congressman, said it's time we drew a red line. And I wonder what your thoughts are about that, about troop engagement. So Adam Kinzinger, our local congressman, said he wants to introduce a resolution that would call on the Congress to authorize the use of military forces, that we would fight the Russians in Ukraine if Russia uses weapons of mass destruction, which he defines as biological, chemical, or nuclear. I understand that sentiment, but I just don't want to do anything. What are your thoughts, Joel, that would escalate matters or force us to escalate matters?
I'm sure I'm going to give you a professor's answer, but I'll try and be quick. So we've talked about Kinzinger before, and I just want to say at the outset, I'm a huge admirer of Congressman Kinzinger's courage, principle, dedication to principles and honesty. At the beginning of this crisis, he was advocating a much more belligerent tone. Perhaps that was because at that point he wasn't sure where the rest of his party would be at and whether they would align with Russia. And that was a legitimate fear at the time. So he was calling for us to enforce no-fly zones and things that would have brought us in direct contact, conflict with the Russian military, direct conflict. And I was warning against that. This measure is much more nuanced. This would be a congressional authorization to President Biden to respond as the administration sees fit in if there were use of weapons of mass destruction by Russia on Ukrainian territory or anywhere for that matter. It's unclear that the president needs such authorization, so it's largely symbolic. But it is not requiring anything. It would simply be a statement in advance from Congress of support to the White House that essentially says, we like how you're handling this, and if you need to do more in light of this kind of circumstance, you've got the blessing to do so. But it doesn't obligate us to do anything.
Well, maybe not, but it strikes me as a pressure point. It strikes me as a way for, and it's funny because while he's a Republican, he is a centrist, and I think it makes us look feckless or without recourse if the Congress is saying, hey, they're using weapons of mass destruction, we hereby authorize you to send in troops, and we don't. It just seems to me like it's an opportunity for divisiveness when we should be unified.
Possibly, but the circumstances will dictate the the appropriateness of a response. And it doesn't necessarily mean it would be use of chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons. It doesn't even mean it would necessarily be a response directly against the Russian military.
Does it seem, Joel, as though the West is doing everything it can? Ukraine is literally fighting, and the West is doing everything it can. And it seems to be getting even better, with Germany saying they don't want to buy oil from Russia either. So these things have to be taking a toll on Russia one way or another. And yet, it doesn't seem as though Putin's resolve is wavering at all. We have, what is it, May 9th coming up here. What's your thought about the significance of May 9th?
Putin will try to declare some kind of triumph on that date, largely because he has to. I don't think it's going to change anything about the situation on the ground. I do believe that one factor that leads to the continuation is the absence of pressure within Russia. And it is rather astounding the degree to which fear has immobilized even those ultra-rich Russians. The ones who have been sanctioned, they're still trying to protect what they have, even in the wake of those sanctions. And nobody is speaking out. Nobody seems to be pressuring, despite the fact that these guys really value, the perks of wealth that they've enjoyed. We have learned that several wealthy Russians, the media labels them oligarchs, but they don't really fit because none of them have had the kind of political clout that those at the top have had. But five have been murdered, along with their wives and spouses and children, in different parts of the world, not just in Russia, all stabbed to death, all spouses and kids also stabbed to death, with it made to look like murder-suicide. The timing, the consistency of method makes very clear that these were targeted killings, and many of them are low-level ones who had expressed some kind of, if not opposition, critique of the invasion.
I haven't heard that much about that. That's maybe not surprising, but also startling, if I may. I've also noticed that there still seems to be a measure of ineptitude by the Russian forces.
Oh, yeah.
Witness them seizing farm implements from Ukraine, but then the Ukrainians disabling them remotely, or them sabotaging the trains by hacking into the computer systems so Russia couldn't move its armaments in. The people of Ukraine flooding their towns to slow down the advance. You know, the people just seem to be outwitting the Russian army, don't they?
A lot of that, and yet let's not underplay the severity of Russian actions in stealing grain and grain stores and successfully taking seeds in particular. It seems like there is an attempt to use food as a weapon across Ukraine. But the ingenuity and resilience of the Ukrainian response is certainly something that's been an inspiration and I think helped to unify the West and beyond the West in opposition to Russia's actions.
And all of that may pale in comparison to missiles just destroying the cities. I mean, we haven't talked a lot about that, but that continues unabated.
It definitely continues. The second largest city, Kharkiv, is just being pummeled. It's a city that's nearly the size of Chicago, so it's not an insignificant place at all, and is being devastated in ways that some of the other towns that we've seen on the news have been devastated. It is truly horrific and remains so.
Let's keep our eyes, ears open, and we always appreciate the observations of Joel Ostrow from Benedictine University. I'll call you again, Joel.
John, thanks so much. Have a good day.